you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Okay.
And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
They underestimated the compassion of our country. I think they misunderestimated the will and determination of the commander-in-chief, too.
Sounds like me. So is the president intelligent? And do we need a brilliant president or just somebody who surrounds himself with the right people? Here to help answer that question, Lord.
Secondly, there are such things as roving wiretaps. Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland because we value the Constitution. But a roving...
Hello, this is George W. Bush. Tomorrow is election day.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there, everybody. How you doing this afternoon? A beautiful, beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. About, 82 degrees and sunny and just absolutely gorgeous. Makes me feel good. Makes everybody feel good. That's why the whole world's here right now, so it seems. Hard to drive down the road. There's so many cars from up north here. But welcome to everybody that's here, and welcome to all of you that are listening to the Guy James Show today, no matter where you are. Got a note from our friend Jacob Mathen over in Finland and our professor friend from South Korea recently, and folks all over the place. And I'm always glad to hear from you. And by the way, we kind of started a new little setup here at the show. Since I direct, produce, and host the show, why it's hard to keep track with everything. I'm doing a couple of chat rooms during the program, it's been impossible for me to keep up with email during the show. But you can send your email now during the program to Guy James at the Guy James Show. And I'll be looking out for him, okay? I've got a little gizmo here on my right now. My laptop, actually, that I'll take the email on and keep up with chat rooms and everything else on the main screens. We've got, what do we got? We got three screens in here. So we're trying to keep up with everything. Glad to have all of you along with us here today on the Guy James Show. A few notes of things coming up. First of all, I want to thank Billy Shears, music director of the Guy James Show. He's got some good music on tap for you today with the breaks while we take a little breather, a couple-minute breather here and there. Billy supplies the music, does a great job of it. I do want to remind everybody that next week, I'm not exactly sure how our schedule's going to go next week. We are going to I am going to Washington on Tuesday, and I'll be there through Friday night. So we will try and do the show Tuesday. We'll probably have a repeat on Tuesday because I will just have arrived at Washington National. I refuse to call it anything but Washington National. Be arriving there around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't think I'll have time to get over and get our equipment set up at the Mayflower to do the show on Tuesday from there. But anyway, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we'll have live shows from Washington. We're going to be there in response to a group called the Families USA. We're going to be at the Mayflower Hotel. I can tell you, if there's any place in the world you'd like to go and have breakfast, it's at the Mayflower. Spectacular place, and it's one of those places that everybody who's anybody has breakfast at the Mayflower, so always enjoy that. It's about $20, but but that's part of the deal, going to Washington. So we're looking forward to it very, very much, and I hope you'll join us next week. We'll be talking about issues that affect the families around the country, military families, health issues with the families, and we'll have some politicians on. We'll have some probably lobbyists on. We'll have a variety of people on the program. In fact, I was just taking a look at the list of people who are going to be available and picking out who I want to talk to and so forth. And so well, maybe we'll get you a little better informed about that tomorrow. Also, today we're going to have Anthony Arnov, who edited the book along with Howard Zinn called The Logic of Withdrawal, talking about Iraq. And he's going to be with us at the bottom of the hour today. Should have a good conversation with him. And our good friend Dick Nojay is going to be with us to talk about Democrat.com initiative to impeach George W. Bush. So that it's called Impeach for Change over at Democrats.com if you want to take a look at it. If you want the website for that, it's democrats.com/CDIC. And, well, we'll explain it a little more. Dick's going to call us sometime in the second hour. We'll just have a slight conversation with him. Have you kept up with everything over the weekend? See Junior's speech? Wasn't it nice? Well, I mean, it wasn't really a speech. It was an interview with, I can't think of the guy's name, but an interview on 60 Minutes, which I found, again, frightening. I don't know. This guy just scares me so much. He's not the type of guy that normally would scare anybody, because in everyday life, when you run across people like George W. Bush, you just fluff them off and say, well, there goes another one, you know. But when you understand that this guy has the military, the might of the United States under his control, then it becomes frightening. Then you understand that you're not dealing with a normal situation here, that something that could, has gotten out of hand and can get a whole lot worse. And I don't think I've ever been so worried for our country as I am at the moment. So what do you think of this situation? And I hope you'll give us a call and let us know, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have some new callers today. Maybe some of you have been sitting around thinking about, well, I'll call some of these days. Hey, it's painless, and we'll be really nice to you. And I ask, what did you think of the situation? What situation? You ask, come on now. From the time that you were old enough to understand even a smidgen of what politics and government's all about, I'll bet you never thought that we would live under a dictatorship, did you? I didn't. I never thought that I'd see the day when an American politician stood before the people of the United States and their elected officials and simply and plainly stated that he didn't give a rat's ass what everyone else thought. He is the ruler of this land, and he is going to do whatever damn well pleases him. That is exactly what the point the man was making on Sunday night on 60 Minutes. And I forget the exact numbers, but I think it's something like, I don't know, 80% don't think the war's going well in Iraq, something like 60-some percent don't think they ought to send more troops into that meat grinder over there. Can you imagine having the gall to stand before the American people and tell that 80% of them, just take a flying leap. He's only doing this because he's a lame duck. He knows damn well that if he'd be bounced right out of office before you could say Bush 41 if he had to run again. So now he feels empowered to do anything you want. Normally, you think of a lame duck president. Well, just that. Just somebody that's not going to be very influential, not going to have a lot of say in what goes on. But no, not Junior. He sees it the exact opposite way. He sees it as a license to steal. He sees it as a license to go ahead and do anything he wants. So the way I see it, Junior's now joining the ranks of other famous dictators in world history. And what a nice group to be in. And I thought a lot about dictators that he would fit in nicely with their ideology of it, me, and I'm the king and you're nothing but scum. Idi Amin, Fidel Castro, he fits in very well with Jean-Claude Duvalier from Haiti, formerly from Haiti. Saddam Hussein, I think he's a whole lot like him. King John Il, Mao Zedong, Stalin, Mussolini, Pinochet, a lot like Pinochet, and a whole hell of a lot like Napoleon. I think Bush gets sexually aroused just thinking about being in the same group as Napoleon and Mao, don't you? Think of the freedom this evil little clown has right now. In his first term, he had to play a little bit nice with the people and the politicians. And now he can tell everybody just to pound sand, and he's doing it. That 60-minute interview was really the end of the line for me. I just can't hold it in any longer. And if there's anything I can do to help organize any sort of a serious impeachment effort, I'll do it. We need to rally, to march, to protest, to demonstrate. We need to fill the mall in Washington, D.C. with protest over and over and over again until our politicians finally get the message and send him packing. He does not deserve to live in the people's house. He does not deserve the respect usually granted to the occupant of the Oval Office. And he's made a mockery of everything we hold dear in this country. And he and his followers can go jump in the river as far as I'm concerned. He's brought more harm, more shame, and more disrespect to this country than all the rest of our presidents in our history added together. We have a group of people trying their best to arrest and deport illegals in this country when all most of them are trying to do is just feed their families and survive. Rounding them up, deporting them, arresting them, deporting them. And yet we allow a flaming lunatic to give orders to our military and our people, a lunatic like Bush. Is this world turned upside down or what? All of the illegal immigrants added together have not caused as much harm and as much financial distress on this country than has George Bush and his illegal, immoral war. The financial impact alone on this country has been and will continue to be devastating to the economy of the United States. If only we could ship his ass to Mexico. I'd love to see that. When you stop and think about it, we're allowing him to almost single-handedly destroy this country, and he seems to be enjoying doing it. That's the part. Did you notice that smug, egotistical, I'm better than anyone else attitude was back when he did the interview on 60 Minutes? It was back. That was the real George Bush. And the cowardly little bastard has the nerve in that interview to pretend like he was all emotional after meeting with families of military personnel, the ones he sent to be killed in Iraq for nothing whatsoever. I wonder what the families had to say to him. I know what I'd say to him if it was my kid that was killed in his own personal private war. He wouldn't want to be in a room with me under those circumstances. And I know a lot of those people don't want to hear it, but every single one of those kids died in vain. There's no other way to put it. They were not defending our way of life. They were not protecting our democracy. They were not protecting us from any kind of military threat from another country. All the noble things that they might have died for and that they would have died for were absolutely not present in Iraq. They died in vain, every single one of them. And I truly believe George Bush is as much a dictator as any in that group I just mentioned. He revels in it. And I know you all remember he stated some time ago, a dictatorship would be fine as long as I'm the dictator. Remember those words? He meant every single one of them. He set out to do it, and he succeeded. And he's every bit as evil as some of them I mentioned on that list. I hate to say it, but, you know, to the rest of the world, we're a ship of idiots for continuing to give this drunken captain a chance after chance. It's time to toss him to the sharks and turn the damn boat around already. We shouldn't be analyzing anything this monster says anymore. You know, you can play gotcha with Bush's words all you want. He doesn't care. Bush is lying. Bush is wrong. It's been established 1,000 times. We're going to be a bunch of clever statement parsers who live in the smoldering ruins of what once was a great nation if we don't take Bush and Cheney down. And it can't happen soon enough. Anybody see Hagel on Chuck Charlie Rose the other day? I've yet to hear a Democrat raise the alarm in such a term, strong terms. Where are you, Democrats? What's happening with you? Is it really off the table? I don't want to jump the gun, but I also think that it's time for the Democrats to maybe start talking the talk and walking the walk. They're not so far. I'll give them a chance. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You know, I look at the news every day, and I keep wondering, are the people we Democrats elected in November listening to us? I don't think they are. Well, maybe a handful. And they're talking a good game, but I don't think they're going to do the main thing we sent them there to do. I really don't. And if you have doubts about that, take a look at what's happening with the Iraq War. Nearly everyone agreed that the election was a referendum on the war. I think we all agreed on that. The polls support this view and show that most people think the war was a mistake and want to see the troops withdrawn. That Bush has staked too much on his blunder to do anything but increase the number of troops. You know, surge sounds temporary. And a lot of people have fallen for that term. But this administration estimates an 18-month operation of this surge. And we all know that'll be an underestimation. So what do the Democrats promise? Hearings, and that's it? They promise not to cut the war money or attach conditions to it? Yet the leaders say they oppose the surge? So where does that leave them? No surge and no withdrawal? In other words, stay the course? That's the Democrats' alternative. Is that what the American majority voted for? Man, I hope not. I hope they shape up. Let's go over to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm here, too. This is Phil in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
You?
Good.
I just called our Senator Bill Nelson's office and spoke with the kid. I wish these guys had a day where they answered the phone, you know, the actual senators.
Yeah, keep dreaming, Phil.
These poor kids, you know, these poor kids. Nelson, well, first of all, Martinez is supporting Bush's call for, Mel Martinez, Bush's call for, you know, the escalating the war.
Sure.
This is for the, you may have mentioned it already, I just turned you on, there's a national call in to the White House switchboard to get folks to ask their senators to support Ted Kennedy's call to, what is it, Senate 233? S.233 to oppose the escalation.
Right.
And so I called in, and Martinez, another Republican senator that avoided Vietnam, another Republican flag waving, support the troops, who was of service age during Vietnam and did not go, and whose own kids aren't in Iraq. I gave his guy an earful, but he didn't say, well, he's still deciding. At least Martinez had the balls enough to say, I'm for Bush's call. We got Bill Nelson still deciding, you know.
Well, I did hear Nelson say the other day that he's against this sending more troops in.
But
what's he going to do about it? I mean,
that's what I told the kid on the phone. I said, well, has he put his signature on to co-sponsor Kennedy's call? No, because he's not sure if we pull out of Iraq, you know, what will happen.
Yeah, he made a big show of sitting in front, you know, front of Condi Rice the other day and telling her how he's been lied to over and over again and all that stuff, and said he wouldn't support sending more troops in. But you're exactly right. When the rubber meets the road here, what's going to happen?
And you mentioned Chuck Hagel, and I mentioned that to the Nelson staffer. I said Chuck Hagel in the summer of 05 was calling this thing Vietnam.
Yep.
And then, once again, Chuck Hagel was what, one of three senators who actually went to Vietnam, you know? My God, man, I think, what was Molly Ivan's column the other day, that we should be out in the streets with pots and pans?
Yeah, Molly knows how to say it. Molly's a gem, that's for sure. I by the way, I want to wish her well, too. She's fighting a tough battle right now, and I hope she can come out of it okay. She's an American treasure.
I wasn't aware of that. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. I hope she's turns for the better.
She's got a serious condition.
Well, thanks for telling me about that, Guy. I'll read up on it. But man, we have got to grab our neighbors by the arm and say, man, it is time to come out of your slumber. These guys are Ron Paul, the congressman who's running for president, by the way, you know, he's openly warning about a Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Sure.
And these guys have already done it, you know, in my belief, 9/11, you know, folks want to laugh at me if they will, but at least check into it, folks. These guys are going for Iran. They're going for it. The naval group's over there. Bush saying what he said the other night. Basically saying, hey, I'm going to do this. Ha, ha, ha. You know?
Right.
And the Senate and the Congress, thankfully, the out of Iraq Congress caucus and the Congress is the women and the blacks. Ain't it always the way,
yep,
Guy?
That's right.
You know, it's the women and the black. The women have the most balls to begin with, you know, and the blacks, the ones that get beat down the most, are the ones that'll stand up to take a beating.
Sure.
And it's the rest of these blowhards, man. I think we got to start banging pots and pans.
Well, maybe I should take a couple pots and pans to Washington with me next week. I'm going to have breakfast, by the way, Wednesday morning with Senator Nelson.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I'm going to have a chance to bend his ear a little bit.
I'll send you some pots and pans, Guy.
Hey, thanks, Phil. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, too, Guy.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye now.
And let's go over to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, this is Sarge. How you doing?
Hi, Sarge.
Hey, I got some information for you.
Uh-huh.
I sent Senator Joe Lieberman, well, actually I called to start out with, Joe Lieberman's press secretary, and asked why he made the statements he made on Sunday, and I even played a remark by George Bush that refuted what he was saying. And I wanted to ask her about the Katrina statement as well. And she said, would you please email me those questions because I can't answer them on the phone.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post at unreportednews.net on my column the questions that I ask, and if they reply, then I will post their reply as, you know, in full. I'm not going to shortchange anything they say, whether I agree or disagree with the reply. And let people see it. And anybody that wants to know how to contact them, hey, I'll help you. It's very simple. Press at Lieberman.Senate.gov. And anybody that wants to contact them, I totally encourage you to do so, because we need to get this guy, you know, we either need to make him show his true colors and just, you know, prove out that he doesn't care what the American people think, and just expose him for the fraud that he is.
Well, he is that, and, you know, Holy Joe's back in now and really doesn't give a damn anymore. He's another one in the runaway train. He's going to go ahead and do what he wants to do and stand and lie to the public, and he's no Democrat and never was, never will be.
Well, he's not a Democrat now, officially, and that's another thing that aggravates me about what our Democrats are doing, although they're doing some good things. I don't want to minimize the good that they're doing, because we, you know, at least they're doing a little bit, you know, they can do a heck of a lot more. But we've got to get these people, let them know how we feel. We can't just sit back and say, well, I don't like that decision they made. Get on the telephone, call them, send them emails, get out in the streets if you have to. But let's, you know, we got to let them know how we feel about this thing. We can't just sit back. I've been doing some work on Katrina. I received a call from the Democratic Committee of Homeland Security today, and I'm going to get them some information. I'm trying to push for them to really get active on this thing, and I'm going to set them up with some people that can give them some hard, cold, solid facts with proof that will just make it virtually impossible for them to ignore it.
Well, you know, there's a handful of good people in Congress, and that's as far as I'll go with it, is a handful.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. We have we've got to really stay on them and let them see that we're not going to just sit back and say, oh well, that's our guys. Oh shoot, no, we've got to really work these people. And I know they don't. A lot of the staffers are, you know, kind of asinine, but. You know, and I'm the worst one to be giving this advice, but you've got to call in and try and keep your cool with them and talk to them, you know, and God, I hate to say this, a respectable manner, because sometimes you really feel like they don't deserve any respect.
Hey, the last time I was there, I ran into a staffer that I, it turns out the one I'd talked to on the phone several times about getting an interview with a certain Democratic congressman who really thinks he's something. And a staffer came over to me in Washington and said, oh, you're here. Yes, why, the senator would be glad to be on your show. And I said, no, I don't want him on the show. And I said, I said, it's good to meet you. It's nice to finally meet the little punk I've been talking to on the telephone for, yeah. And he stood there and looked at me and said, what? And I said, yeah, that's what you are. I mean, you just think you're really something, don't you? Walking around, you're wet behind the ears just out of college and telling established people, well, you know, you can do this and you can't do that. I mean, that whole scene, I really hate it. I really do.
Well, you know, as hard as I have worked on this Katrina issue, not to mention what I've been through personally from being a victim of Katrina, it's really sad that I'm having to work so hard just to get them to even listen to me. You know, I mean, it's been almost a year and a half now, and I'm just now starting to get a few people listening. And
I know how it is. I know how it is. Hey, Sarge, I got to run. I got my interview coming up. I got to hit them right on the nose with the time. And
okay.
Yeah, call me again tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Bye now. Yeah, we are going to pause for a little break right at the moment, and we'll be right back.
Those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
And we're back with the Guy James Show. Thanks, everybody, for being with us this afternoon. We got plenty of time to talk to you this afternoon. Got an hour and a half left, and we're going to have a guest or two on. And right now, as promised, as advertised, we've got Anthony Arnold on with us, responsible for the logic of withdrawal that so many of you have talked about and noted. Anthony, are you with us?
Yeah, happy to be on the show.
Hey, glad to have you with us here today. We specifically wanted to talk about your feelings about the withdrawal and how things are going. And you collaborated with Howard Zinn on this, didn't you?
Well, Howard wrote the foreword to the paperback, and he also wrote an afterword for the hardcover edition, which came out a while ago. The paperback is just out, updated. And Howard and I also worked on a book together called Voices of a People's History of the United States.
Good, yeah. There's so much, there's too much common sense in this for a lot of people to accept. And I'm wondering, you know, I feel so much like you do in reading all your comments about the Iraq, I keep wanting to say Vietnam. People my age do that. I mean, I automatically want to say Vietnam. There's so many parallels with it, don't you think?
Absolutely. In fact, I should say I took the title of my book from one that Howard Zinn wrote in 1967 called Vietnam, The Logic of Withdrawal. And if you go back and read that book, it's frightening how insightful it is, not just about Vietnam, and, you know, that was 1967. Years more went by, and many more millions of lives were claimed as that war was escalated and expanded. But to see how prescient it is about what the United States is doing in Iraq, it's just, it's really tragic.
Well, it is. And, you know, I think we've got a tough slog ahead of us here right now. It seemed like... well, it didn't seem like it absolutely was true, that during the Vietnam War, being a draft and all, that just about everybody was involved in it one way or another, or thought they were going to be involved. And there wasn't that much trouble in getting the political momentum to put a stop to that thing. How do you think we're going to generate enough political momentum right now to try and get us out of there?
Well, I think it's a really important question. The interesting thing to me is that at an earlier stage than during the Vietnam War, we've got a majority of the public on our side. If, you know, the opinion polls are pretty clear now that most people think the war was a mistake. They think we should have never gone in. They say they feel less safe, not more safe, as a result. And they also oppose the escalation that Bush has just proposed. And also Bush's popularity ratings are the lowest of anyone since Richard Nixon at the height of the Watergate scandal. So it's not as if we're swimming against the stream. I think the question is, to what extent are people organized and vocal about their opinions? You know, I think the midterm elections also showed that people reject the policy in Iraq. They want to change. It's just that they're not getting it, and the politicians, I don't think, are going to deliver that change. In fact, you know, Bush is going 180 degrees the wrong direction, talking about sending 21,500 more troops and talking about maybe spreading the war, if you listen closely to what he's saying about Iran and Syria. But I think that the difference is not just the draft. I think this war is affecting a lot of communities. There's all the reservists who are being called up. There's a kind of a backdoor draft going on in this country. There's all the communities that are facing cuts in social spending that are directly connected to this war, which has now cost, if you include the indirect economic costs, the best study I've seen is about $1.6 trillion. That's affecting people all around this country, and God knows we could spend that money on all kinds of things that would help people and that's necessary. But also, I think if you go back to Vietnam, it was the civil rights movement that helped fuel and spark the anti-war movement. And I think we're coming out of a different period than we were in the 60s. And so it's going to take more rebuilding those kinds of grassroots networks that can mobilize people to hit the streets, let the politicians know what we think. But I think we can do it even without a draft. There's no shortcuts to doing it, but the sentiment is out there, and I'm encouraged by the fact that you have these soldiers speaking out. You've got groups like Iraq Veterans Against War. You have the appeal to redress. You have the military families now involved. That's a very important element, and that took much longer to develop during Vietnam, but it was decisive. If you go back, it was decisive, I think, in ending the war in Vietnam.
Well, what's going to be the difference? In the Vietnam era, we had massive public protest at universities in Washington time after time, outside the White House, until the din was hard to put up with inside the White House. We had that type of thing then, and now, yes, I agree with you. There is a tremendous amount of support for getting us the hell out of there. But we don't have these massive groups. We've got 1,000 small groups. It seems to me just not, I don't know, there's no glue that holds everything together, I think. We're not, I don't know if we're getting the point across. Maybe we are, but how are we going to manifest it is, I guess, my question.
Well, I think you're right. We need more unity. There's really so much that unites the various groups that care about this war, that whatever differences we may have on small issues, they pale in comparison to what unites us, and they also pale in comparison to the consequences of this occupation and war. I mean, it's just, you know, we're getting closer to the threat of nuclear warfare. We're getting closer to the threat of a conflagration in the Middle East that would involve much more serious fighting involving outside powers. We're getting much closer to a series of humanitarian disasters in the world. You know, Iraq right now is the world's largest refugee crisis. The human toll is just incalculable. So we've absolutely got to push for more unity. Secondly, I think we've got to go back and learn what it took during the Vietnam War as you point out, the din in the White House got to be so large that no matter how much they were denying to the public that they were listening, we now know that they perceived that they were losing the war at home and that the costs of continuing in Vietnam ultimately came to outweigh the cost of staying. And that calculus of power hasn't shifted enough yet for this administration, and we have to shift that calculus of power, but I think we can do it.
Well, one of the other problems is a difference in leadership between then and now. Although I didn't go along with Richard Nixon, his tact and Johnson's tact in the Vietnam War, you know, here we have a man leading the country right now that, in essence, on Sunday night said, I don't give a damn what you think. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and you're not going to stop me, and neither is the Congress going to stop me. And in essence, that is what he said. And I don't know that I ever heard it quite that way back during Vietnam.
I think it was a remarkable statement. And Dick Cheney, of course, said something very similar right before the midterm elections in November. He said, it doesn't matter what way people vote, we're going to continue our policy in Iraq. And what I find so interesting is that we claim we're spreading democracy in Iraq and we're spreading democracy in the Middle East, and yet this administration shows such contempt for democracy at home, doesn't care what the people actually think, but it's also showing contempt for democracy in Iraq, because the Iraqi people have made it very clear in poll after poll and also by their actions that they do not want to live under U.S. occupation, that they want to determine their own future. And if we really believe in democracy, then we should let the Iraqi people make those decisions. We shouldn't be making those decisions for them. But we're not, because what we actually want is something far different than democracy in Iraq. We want a stable client regime. We want military bases. We want to control the oil. And we want to be able to project our power beyond Iraq, in the Middle East, and globally. And that's what's really at stake. And when you realize how much is at stake for this administration in Iraq, given the claims they made for what they would achieve, it's really a very sober thing to contemplate, because they are quite determined to continue to pursue those original goals, no matter what the human cost, no matter how many more soldiers have to be sacrificed or how many more Iraqis have to be sacrificed.
Absolutely right. And, you know, you look back through history, how many times has this type of event happened in history? I mean, an occupying power moves in, says we're not leaving, and in many cases they did leave. But here we have the American people, we have many of our legislators and allies and everything else saying, hey, we have to leave and we should leave. And yet we've got a handful, and it's not much more than that, in leadership positions saying, no, we're going to stay no matter what. One wonders where this battle is going to end and how it's going to end. If it's going to be with some sort of a constitutional crisis, will Bush end up... You know, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about this tepid, and I think it's sort of a tepid impeachment movement. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think the impeachment movement really lacks an effective strategy, because the reality is, even if Bush were impeached, you have Dick Cheney as president. The problems we face are much more than one man, and I think there's a danger in concentrating too much on George Bush instead of looking at the bigger picture, which is that this is a largely bipartisan policy. Democrats have either enthusiastically supported or gone along for a ride for most of the program, and then what's really opening up now are tactical debates, not principled, fundamental disagreements that would lead to the kind of principled actions that could bring an end to this war and bring a change of course in U.S. foreign policy. There's tactical debates, tactical disagreements. And so I think we have to focus not on one individual or impeachment, which I don't really think is a solution, which is not to say I wouldn't be happy to see George Bush held accountable for his crimes, and there are many of them, but I'd like to see a lot of other people held accountable too.
Well, yeah, I kind of see the impeachment as a group thing. There's quite a few people I'd like to see go. And right now you're speaking to a largely liberal Democratic audience, and many of which are extremely, extremely disappointed that it beginning to appear that we really are a one-party system with two different teams on this in the same party, but it sometimes the differentiation between the parties just doesn't show like it ought to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Democrats really have to be held to account, especially now that they're in a majority in the House.
And, more so, I hold them to absolutely. Account more so right now.
Absolutely, and they were voted in as a protest against what's happening in Iraq. And they do have power. This idea that they have no power, that they can't do anything, it's just ludicrous. And people, I don't think, are going to buy it. But we really, I think, have to target them and send a very clear message that we elected you to change things. We didn't elect you to have oversight or have hearings or to pass non-binding resolutions that aren't going to change things, that aren't going to bring the troops home. We need to get the troops home.
That's right. And you know, the Republicans can stand there and say, hey, you didn't elect me to put a stop to this. You knew where I was coming from. These Democrats all told you that they were going to go to Washington. They were going to put a stop to this. At least they said they would. And now many of them are doing some serious backtracking.
Yeah, and it's only going to then hurt them in the next election cycle. It's a classic Democratic trap that they fall into over and over again. It's why Kerry lost the election. He could have easily won if he had articulated a clear position against the war. But they try to out-Republican the Republicans, and then they end up losing.
That's exactly a good way to put it. Who was it? I think it was Harry Truman that said, given the choice between a Republican and a Democrat who acts like a Republican, I'll take the vote for the Republican every time.
Yeah, that was Truman, and he was right. I think people can see through a fraud.
Yeah. Well, what about the media's role in all of this? Have you seen a change? I think I've seen a slight shift. Where do you think their responsibility lies in this right now?
Well, I think you got to go back to the invasion itself and say that the invasion never could have taken place if the establishment media had done its job properly. If they had asked the tough questions, if they had exposed the stories about weapons of mass destruction, Iraq's connection to al-Qaeda or 9/11, if they had done that instead of the opposite, which was to front page the most baseless propaganda that was sold to the American public to get this war through, then we would never would have had the invasion of Iraq in the first place. So they're very culpable. Having been so clearly exposed, they have adjusted slightly, but only slightly. I think basically what they've done is they've gone back to the old liars for new lies. You know, the first set of lies was why we have to go into Iraq. The new set of lies is why we can't leave Iraq. And there's a little more skepticism, a few more tough questions, but really not the kind of adversarial press that we need, not the kind of reporting that's unembedded reporting, independent reporting showing the human costs of this war in a way that brings home to the American public, to the U.S. public, the real nature of what's going on in Iraq, the real nature of life under occupation, and the real nature of life for U.S. soldiers who are needlessly being sent to kill and be killed in Iraq.
Well, I think so many times we've heard the Republicans and this administration most pointedly try and prove their point by saying that the media was not reporting the truth in as much as they weren't telling all the great things that were happening in Iraq, when in fact I think just the opposite is true. I don't think we have any idea as to how bad it really is there, and we're beginning to get some of that.
I think you're absolutely right. I was recently in Memphis, and there was a former Iraq soldier there, an Iraq veteran, Paul Rykoff, and he said, if you want good news coverage, go to Disney World, go to Disneyland. Don't go to Iraq, because it's not there. It's hell there, And I think only now are we beginning to get a little bit of a sense of that. But if you go back to Vietnam, there were many more images of the war on television in the newspapers then. And, you know, one of the images actually that helped galvanize sentiment against Vietnam was not of a U.S. soldier, but of a Vietnamese girl. If you recall the picture of the girl fleeing a village.
Oh, yes.
And it was a sense of the contradiction between we claim to be liberating these people, but look at what we're actually doing. You know, George Bush the other night said he regretted Abu Ghraib. But it's not just Abu Ghraib. It wasn't just one isolated incident. Torture is widespread. Abuse of civilians is widespread. And more we're finding out about massacres like the Haditha massacre, like the Mahmoudia massacre. And those are an inevitable outcome in a situation where you're trying to impose your will on a population that overwhelmingly rejects your presence and where everyone is a potential enemy. In that kind of situation, you're inevitably going to have disasters, no matter how well-trained or well-intentioned the soldiers themselves are.
And the question that never gets asked of the American people, my God, what would you do in a similar situation? I mean, you'd break out every weapon you had. You'd do what you had to do to defend yourself and your family. And yet, you know, the press, when this whole thing started, they were just all too anxious to trot out all those snazzy new graphics and that Wagner-like music that they put on when everything, you know, shock and all that. Man, they couldn't wait for this.
No, it's true. The behavior of our press is really, I mean, you can't say enough about it. When you go back and look at the role that reporters like Judith Miller played, you look at the press conferences where U.S. reporters were cheering on as the military was announcing the progress of the military battle. They completely dropped any pretense of being independent, objective, critical, adversarial. And you go back to one of the journalists who was so important during the Vietnam War, I.F. Stone. He had an insight that I think every journalist should, you know, put at the forefront of their thinking when dealing with government officials. He said, governments lie. That's the first thing you need to understand as a reporter. Governments lie. And we've seen so much evidence of that lately on so many issues, from domestic spying to torture to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But if you go in with the assumption that governments don't lie, that they tell the truth, and you just serve as a kind of stenographer or an echo chamber for the viewpoints of government officials, for Pentagon spokesmen, you're going to get the kind of media that we've seen lately, which is doing a tremendous disservice to the public.
And is it nothing more than just trying to curry favor with the administration so that you can keep your people in the White House and you can keep your people reporting on the White House lawn and go to the all the fabulous Washington parties? I sometimes wonder why they do it.
I think that's a big part of it. You know, there's serious punishment for journalists who ask the tough questions and speak out. You don't get asked back. You don't get invited on the flights. You don't get the calls. They don't return your phone calls when you're trying to follow up on a story. You don't get the leaks, and you're denied access. And there's this illusion that access gets you the story. And then there's also, of course, the seductions of access. I recently heard someone say something that I thought was quite observant. He said, the media doesn't have a liberal bias or a conservative bias. It has an establishment bias. It has a bias to take the perspectives and views and beliefs of establishment figures as true, as accurate. And that's turned out to be a very bad assumption indeed in recent years.
Yes, and if you don't think you can get denied access, be sure and ask Helen about that. She knows all about it. I'd be put in the back row at the White House gaggles every day.
And Helen Thomas, I was just at a conference in Memphis where Helen Thomas got a standing ovation. And it was a very moving moment, and I stood and applauded her, too. But then I thought to myself, we're giving this woman a standing ovation for just daring to ask questions of the president. Like, what have we come to that Helen Thomas is a hero for just doing what should be of second nature to a journalist?
Yeah, business as usual. I mean, that's what it should be. It's gotten lost somewhere along the line. Anthony, how do you see this whole thing playing out? Give us your best scenario.
Well, I fear that we're in for a long and bloody endgame, much like Vietnam. I think we're in a situation analogous to the late 1960s in Vietnam, where the U.S. had been defeated, but it escalated within Vietnam and spread the war to Laos and Cambodia. And I think that's the most likely scenario, years more of occupation, prolonged occupation and bloodshed, a real humanitarian crisis continuing in Iraq with a real risk of the war spreading, unless, that is, we can mobilize the kind of opposition we talked about earlier in the program to change the calculus of power for Democrats and Republicans.
Well, I can only hope Winston Churchill, I think it was Winston Churchill, I can always remember the statements, but not necessarily who said them, said Americans will always end up doing the right thing after they've tried every other avenue.
Well, I think the American public's ready to do the right thing. We're just going to have to really get our government on side. We're way ahead of Washington on so many issues right now in the U.S. public. We just got to figure out ways of closing that gap.
Anthony, the book is available everywhere?
Yeah, bookstores, online, and there's a website, AmericanEmpireProject.com, for my book and a bunch of other great books on what's going on in
AmericanEmpireProject.com. All right, everybody get that. We'll be sure to mention that again a few times. Anthony, thanks so much for being on the program. You've given us great insight into this, and it's a great book. I've not all the way through it, but about two-thirds, and I must say I've enjoyed what I read, and we very like-minded on this situation. Anthony?
Well, thanks, Guy. I appreciate talking to you.
Thanks so much. It is a good book, The Logic of Withdrawal, and well, I think you will find him like-minded as well. And what about these pundits? What about the press? I was watching the other night, I forget which one of the political talk shows. I don't know if it was Tweety or who it was, but have you noticed the same thing I've noticed, that most of the political talk shows keep having the same guest on, the same expert commentators, and I'm most pointedly talking about some of these Republicans and conservative ones? How many times do we have to listen to these same people spew their ridiculous comments, some of the same ones now since before this war started, up till now? Most of those on the right have been dead wrong on every issue concerning Junior Bush's Iraq war from the beginning, and still they are invited on these shows telling us more and more BS that turns out to be totally false. Have you noticed that? How many times do we have to listen to Charles Krauthammer or Tom Friedman or, what's the woman's name, Cato Byrne and Robert Novak and a host of others tell us how noble and good this war is when the exact opposite's true? Would somebody please tell me why would anybody want to listen to the same people over and over again giving us their ideas and their thoughts when they've been dead wrong all along? I don't understand that. I really, really don't understand that. We just get over and over again, and even some of them admitted they're wrong, and they're back right, and you know, right back in it again. Well, here's my expert opinion. Well, hey, you know what? You take your expert opinion and pound it, man. You've been wrong all along. You are not an expert anymore. When you said this war was going to be a good thing, and it was going to be a good thing for the Iraqi people, and that we're going to be greeted with flowers and candy and the, you know, as heroes, as liberators and all that, you were dead wrong. Why the hell should I ever listen to anything you have to say about politics and war ever again? I mean, it's that simple. And yet they make the rounds, Meet the Press, Tweety Bird Show, Chris Matthews, and the guy on CNN. I can't think of his name, but it's the same way on the Fox News channel is even worse. I mean, that whole damn outfit's been wrong from the beginning on this war. Everybody, all of them. I'm not talking about one or two or even their guests. I'm talking about all their commentators have been dead wrong on this thing all along, proven to be wrong. It's not one. It's not something that Guy James said, well, I think they're wrong. No, we don't think they're wrong. We know they've been wrong. And they got a whole damn network of them over there. And still, we report, you decide. No, they decided a long time ago. They decided what kind of propaganda to put out in front of the American people. And it was wrong. All of it was wrong. How the hell could you put your... I don't get it. I would be so, so embarrassed to come on this show after having told you something for a year or a long time and make, you know, emphatic statements about a war or something and have been proven wrong. How could I expect you to ever listen to me again and put any credence in anything I ever had to say? And yet these people who get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions in some case on these shows to come back over and over and over again, you tell me, what's that about? I really don't know what that's about. I mean, if I were Chris Matthews and some of these Republican strategists they've had on and the Republican experts that he's had on, all you know, holding the fort for Junior Bush all along, why would you have back on again? When, you know, to thinking people, these people look like morons. I don't know. I don't know. Someone's going to have to explain that one to me. Hey, listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We got news coming up at the top of the hour, and we got a whole lot more to talk about in the second hour of the program. We hope you'll call all your neighbors and tell them to tune in. We'll be back right after the news. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. An especially violent day in Baghdad today. At least 65 people were killed outside of a university in a Shiite neighborhood at the time classes ended. Many of the victims were female students. At least 138 were wounded. The United Nations reports that last year at least 34,000 Iraqi civilians were killed in sectarian violence. That figure is much higher than what the Iraqi government reported. Four American soldiers were killed yesterday by an improvised explosive device in northern Iraq, according to the U.S. military. The American death toll in the Iraq War is now at least 3,024. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with the Saudi foreign minister to ask for his country's help in supporting the Iraqi government. He was said to be skeptical of the Iraqi government's ability to do its part. Afterwards, Rice traveled to Kuwait as part of her Middle East trip to meet with U.S. allies and urge them to support the president's Iraq policy. First-term Democratic Senator Barack Obama of Illinois announced today that he is creating a Presidential Exploratory Committee, the first step in a 2008 presidential run. The decision was announced on his website. He said he would have more to say about his plans in mid-February. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, who just completed a trip to Iraq and Afghanistan, canceled her planned press conference this afternoon. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert will be investigated by the government for his involvement in a bank privatization deal. He was deputy finance minister at the time. He has denied allegations of wrongdoing. Today, jury selection began in the perjury and obstruction trial of former Chief of Staff to Vice President Cheney, Louis Scooter Libby. He is accused of lying about leaking the identity of a CIA officer to reporters. A Spanish newspaper reports today that Cuban leader Fidel Castro has undergone at least three operations which failed, and he is suffering from complications of an infection. The paper states that the ailing leader faces a very grave prognosis. A Cuban diplomat in Spain denied the account. South of Louisville, a train derailment and fire forced the closure of a busy Kentucky interstate today. A highly flammable liquid was on board several of the cars. There were no reports of injuries. However, nearby schools and businesses and homes were evacuated as a precaution. A baby has just been born who came from a frozen embryo that was rescued from a flooded New Orleans hospital following Hurricane Katrina. The baby boy is named Noah. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science news are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The winter ice storm that hit the Midwest and Plain states is now causing problems on the East Coast. 42 people have died in 6 states. The weight of the ice has broken tree limbs and knocked out power to tens of thousands of customers. The 4-day freeze that hit California has cost citrus farmers at least $650 million. A citrus grower called the devastation a disaster. 70% of the orange crop may have been destroyed. Overall, the state's citrus industry is valued at $1.3 billion. A New York Times analysis of 2005 census data finds that 51% of women say they are living without a spouse. That is the first time in U.S. history that more women are without a husband than with one. Citigroup will soon be rebranded as just Citi. The financial giant will have a new logo without the familiar red umbrella. Pfizer's new chief executive may cut several thousand jobs, according to a report in today's Wall Street Journal. He is also considering major changes in how the world's largest drug company develops, makes, and markets its products. Today, Saudi Arabia's oil minister said further production cuts were not needed. In October, OPEC reduced production by 1.2 million barrels of oil a day. Light sweet crude trading at $51.18. And taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow is down 11 points, NASDAQ down 8, S&P 500 down 2. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us here at the Guy James Show this afternoon. It's always good to have such a nice group along with us. And, yes, we got a healthy crowd here today. And, well, I meant healthy by big. I know lots of you got colds and sniffles and flu and everything else, as do I. Still having trouble shaking off this tickly throat and a little bit of a, you know, upper respiratory thing. I should shut up. Just makes it worse talking about it. Hey, I know, how many of you heard this the other night? I bet you did. I'm just going to play it for you.
Let's listen to this. Do you have the authority to put the troops in there no matter what the Congress wants to do?
I think I've got, in this situation, I do, yeah. Now, I fully understand they could try to stop me from doing it. But I've made my decision, and we're going forward.
Is that not the greatest example of hubris that you've ever heard? This clown, this miserable little... intellectually inferior clown that's in the White House telling everybody just to go to hell. Pretty much it. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Mike from Austintown calling.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you? I agree with you that Bush is just beyond redemption. He just has basically told us he's king and that's that. my question for you was, do you think so far that the new Congress is doing anything to fight back against him, or do you think that they're trying to lure him into a showdown?
I am hoping that, and again, I'm, I wouldn't want to bet on this, but I'm hoping that we haven't given him enough time yet. I'm hoping that maybe our expectations are a little bit over the top and that they're going to need a few weeks to get going. I'm hoping that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I've heard from him so far is certainly not satisfying to me, and I know probably not to you or to anybody that was serious that went to the polls to vote a change at this war. I'm particularly troubled with the ones who say, I don't want to send any more troops. They're adamant about it. I don't want to send any more troops, but no, I won't cut off the funding.
Well,
that's a coward's way out.
It certainly is. It's not even an acceptable middle ground.
No. No, because all they would have to do is go before the public and start pounding it home. Send a couple of dozen of them out every day for interviews. Yes, we're cutting off the funding, but no, you're not cutting off the funding for the kids that are there. We've got plenty of money in the pipeline to bring them home. They've got to pound home that message.
Yes. And I also wanted to ask you, don't you know, you were talking right before the break about how you were seeing the same guests on these opinion form in media shows.
It's amazing.
Yes and no. It is if you thought that they were, if you thought the immediate was trying to do an honest job of reporting and commentating, but not if you realize they really are just trying to influence us to believe everything is well when it isn't, which is what they've been doing for the last, what, 6-8 years maybe?
But I'm insulted.
Well, sure, I am too.
Hey, we put this liar in front of you, and he told you 72 lies, and here's another one, pal. Suck it up. I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm losing faith in the American public, for one thing, that if they actually do believe this stuff. And
yes, I would agree with you if that's the case, because I know I argue with my family all the time. Why do you watch this? It's not true.
Right.
It's a show. It's like, you know, even when you were discussing dictators earlier, what Bush reminds you of, he reminds me of someone like Pierre Laval of Vichy France.
Yeah.
And like the White Cross at that time, that they remind me of the Republicans because they're going out of their way to destroy or weaken the Republic, our Republic.
And strictly because of their own graft, corruption, and throw a little cowardice in there as well.
Yes, and desire to be in charge of everything,
yeah,
all the time.
It's going to bring them down. It has to. Man, yeah. I wish a few of us could get together and go to Washington and give the Democrats some classes for a little while. I don't want to sound the wrong way about that, but my God, I think people out here in the hinterlands know a whole lot more about what ought to be done than most of our legislators do.
Well, if you're driving the bus, stop by my house, guy, and pick me up.
I know right where you're at.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, and thanks for sending that cool map today. I want to try and talk about that if I get
okay,
a little
well,
time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, and I'm going to give everybody the website for that. That's fascinating. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, guy.
Yeah,
bye.
Yeah, Mike sent me a pretty neat map today about how the states in the United States break down with their GDPs as compared to countries in the world. For example, the state of California, their GDP is equal to the country of France. The state of Montana has a GDP equal to the nation of Tunisia, and so on and so forth. Ohio's GDP is the same as the country of Australia. So this is pretty cool. It's farm1.static.flickr.com, and I'll send me an email if you, and I'll reply and give you that.
But it's pretty neat. And I get a lot of cool things from people that watch the show, and I appreciate it so very much. Did you see Lieberman the other day, what he said? You know, I know it's often said that reasonable minds can disagree about things, but how much more obvious can it be that Joe Lieberman's completely off of the Democratic Party reservation? He goes right along with Bush. He wants to escalate the war in Iraq. That isn't reasonable. Most of the high-level military minds disagree, along with over 70% of the American people. It isn't reasonable. And there's no use trying to reason with Lieberman and all of his neocon friends concerning their position. You can't reason somebody, like I said the other day, you can't reason somebody out of a position that they didn't use reason to accept in the first place. Can't be done. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy.
Yes.
This is Dick Noje. How are you?
Hi, Dick. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you on with us today.
Well, glad to be on with you today, Guy.
I should let all my listeners know that we invited Dick on with us today. Dick is, he's a very active activist. We all know about political activists. And I invited Dick to come on the program today and talk about the Democrats.com new program they got going, Impeach for Change. And thanks for doing that, Dick. It's good to have you come on. It's a program that I think can get some legs. It's something that I think Bob Furtick over at Democrats.com got this started. And tell us a little bit about it, Dick.
Well, Bob and I go back to I think the days when we were telephoning at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to get the Gore campaign in 2000 to do a full recount of the entire state of Florida.
Oh, don't bring that up.
And out of our frustration and our failure, you know the rest of the story. But Bob went on to start Democrats.com, and of course, over the last 6 years, we've become, he's not only become very progressive with that website, but very aggressive as well, which is what he calls himself. But Bob and his group have put together, I guess, in over the course of the last year, an impeachment campaign. He came out with Democrats.com/CDIC in November to begin the process of establishing congressional district impeachment committees in every district of the country. And I guess there's well over 100 that have been established now. I think what's really critical about this guy is that in November, I guess, Nancy Pelosi reached out with an olive branch and made a case for bipartisanship and a new day and set impeachments off the table. And in return, they told her to stick it in her ear. And in your face, Nancy, and that's the response we've gotten in the last couple of weeks from this administration.
So exactly.
I think things have changed dramatically, and what's changing so quickly is the attitude, I think, of people in the street. Now, people are really beginning to get worried that do we really have stable leadership in this administration with the kind of things they're threatening to do in Iran and Syria, the escalation of the war in Iraq, and is it time that we really look at the offenses and the things that have been committed by this administration over the years and begin to see, are these truly impeachable offenses? And I think that's what's changed so dramatically even in the last 2 weeks. And there's a new window opening up now. And I think Nancy's going to put it back on the table shortly, but only if all of us really knock down her telephone
sure.
and her emails and do the same with John Conyers, and who promised us these hearings, as you know, months ago, and when there was already a decision made to begin this process towards inquiry.
Well, I really like Bob's approach to this thing. We were talking to a guest we had on a little bit earlier today, saying that I'm searching for a word here, a cohesiveness. There's a million little groups around the country of 5, 10,
right.
20, 50 people. But I think Bob has gone at this in a very logical, good way by trying to set up
an impeachment committee with all in all 435 congressional districts as part of one big cohesive deal rather than a bunch of splinter groups. I love what he's doing here.
Yes, he's been very dedicated for all these years, and he's got a great staff, and I have very, very high respect for Bob, and I hope all your listeners are going to be able to go to that website, Democrats.com, and do the /CDIC to take a look at his whole plan for bringing this about.
It's the best plan I've seen. I really think it is, and, you know, it's just... If everybody keeps pounding away at their Congress critter, why? And then all of a sudden we put all these pieces together, we're going to be able to come at this with some real teeth.
Well, what's important, Guy, is that the process be initiated. I don't know if the final event is really what is all that counts.
Exactly.
But the process must begin, and we must stop being afraid of calling it the way it is. And remember, we never had to take impeachment to make Nixon resign. We've only become afraid of it because they used it against President Clinton in such a laborious way that people, oh, God, it's going to take, we can't do that. It's going to take 2 years. He'll be out of office before we do that. What about Cheney if we get rid of Bush, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the truth of the matter is if the House Judiciary Committee, now led by John Conyers, 22 Democrats and 17 Republicans, bring those articles up. And it looks like there's, and this will be an avalanche. It'll be like a domino effect. And we have the vote now with the Democratic Congress. And the other critical thing that's happened in the last couple of weeks are the key Republican senators, like Hagel and some of the others that are separating from Bush, and when you get Sam Brownback and Norm Coleman, Voinovich, and so forth saying what they're saying, there is a real break in the opportunity here now to make sure that we try to save our country and the rest of the world before this thing gets really out of hand. But
and there's some talk and some pretty serious talk that in the halls of the Senate Office Building that John Warner. Now there's a man right there that if he goes with Hagel and his people, you're talking some serious business.
Well, you've got 10 senators lined up, Republican senators lined up right now, from Brownback all the way to Smith, Snow, Sununu, Hagel, Warner, Collins, Voinovich, Murkowski, Coleman, and Brownback. The next group, you know, Specter and Lugar and Isaacson, Grassley, Thune, and then there's 9 more after that that are up for re-election, most of whom won their last election by less than 5 points. And out of there's 21 Republican senators up for re-election. They know what happened in November, and I think this is our opportunity because if 24 Republican senators walk into that White House and knock on the door and do the same thing they did with Nixon, after they know they've got the Judiciary Committee vote, then it'll be over. We won't have to go through an impeachment process.
Right.
Plus, we're going to be able to do Bush and Cheney because there is a constitutional basis for both of them. But I think the pressure now has to be on Nancy and Pelosi and John Conyers. And on that committee, you know, we've got Bob Wexler, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, both from Florida,
yes,
on that Judiciary Committee. So let's start those phones ringing.
And folks, if you visit that website, you can check and see if your own in your own district. It's got all the districts listed there that have a group started already for this thing. And again, it's at Democrats.com/CDIC, and it's got the ones listed there. And check out your congressional district number. And you can go see if there's a group started there. You can communicate with them. This thing makes sense. And I agree, Dick. I think it's not the actual impeachment. I think it's going to come down to the point where when the Republicans walk in the White House and say, hey, boy, you got to go. Why, both,
right,
both of you guys. That's the way to do it.
Yes, sir. I agree with that.
And they can't they wouldn't be able to. Well, they will hold it against us forever. But
we've got to get through what's going on with the Democrats right now, and why Nancy Pelosi. I mean, we know why she did what she did, but what is she waiting for now? And what is John Conyers waiting for? And the people are waiting for it because I think they're ready. Anybody in the street now is overly concerned with the direction that they're going and. and the arrogance that's coming out of the White House and the neglect of 90% of the population. That just can't continue.
And the fear of this thing widening and just blowing up into a horrible cauldron. The fear's there, and we've got to put the fear in the White House. Dick, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it very much, and give my regards to Bob, and you talk to him again. We visit his site often and talk to him. We had Bob on the program here a while back.
Good.
And Dick, while you're here, just take a moment, if you would, and tell us about your project over in Immokalee, Florida.
Well, you know, we've had a big change here because with Harvest for Humanity in Immokalee, it's a farm worker advocacy project for living wages. It's an affordable housing development for folks who otherwise never own their own home. And both of those two legs under the table are what we call anti-poverty legs and higher wages and inequity. But the third part of that equation and the third leg under the table is higher education. And Florence and I built a 6,800-square-foot harvest center here at Jubilation in Immokalee, along with three other parcels of adjoining land. And we're in the process of donating them and turning them over to International College. And they have agreed to take on the center here, which we haven't really been able to utilize, and use it as a new satellite campus for International College.
Oh, wow.
And they'll be bringing higher education to Immokalee, along with their other two campuses in Fort Myers and Naples. Everything's been agreed to and signed, and we're just waiting for county sign-off. And the folks here are in Live in Jubilation are enthusiastic. We're going to be providing scholarships to eligible residents. And International College is exactly what Immokalee needs because it does cater to the non-traditional student. You know, it's centered on education for those young married people that need to get back to college, and they offer AA degrees as well as bachelor's and master's degrees at International. So it's going to happen this spring, and they'll be open for business in September.
Terrific. Absolutely terrific. Like I said, folks, Dick is an active activist. Dick, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, Guy, we appreciate it, and you take care.
Thank you. Dick Nojay, Harvest for Humanity over in Immokalee, Florida. You wouldn't believe the wonderful things. What a fantastic facility. I've been there a couple of times. It's just amazing. Let's go on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
thank you, Mato, and apologies to Napoleon.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because, for one, I don't know a whole lot about him, but I know he fought with his soldiers, and I think they respected him as the little sergeant or whatever.
Yeah, actually, he did fight. He was, at least he was out on the battlefield with them.
And he won most of his battles.
Yeah, yeah, little problem there at Waterloo and all that, but
yeah, right. And going into Russia, or
yeah.
But anyway, I'm just going to reiterate about impeachment, and I think that whoever comes first, if it's Bush or if it's Cheney, let's not worry about leaving Cheney in there. If we can get Bush first, get him.
I'd like to see kind of a team thing. I'd like to see them both leave hand in hand walking out, you know?
Right, right. And then I know that Bush said that the other night on 60 Minutes, he said that the Iraqis didn't seem to appreciate, you know, what had been done for them.
Right.
And I'd like to know if someone goes to your house, burns it down, kills your family, takes away your communication, takes away your job, changes all the money, then probably put you in jail and torture you, and then expect thanks. I mean.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Juanita, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye. How many of you... Oh, I shouldn't talk about this. Do you ever hear anything come out of his mouth that was so offensive that you wanted to throw something through the TV set? So offensive. The most offensive thing that he's said yet. I know you all saw it, or if you did, maybe some of you Some of you are smart enough not to watch him on TV anymore, but I feel an obligation to do it because I want to be able to talk about it in an informed manner rather than take somebody else's word for it. It wasn't bad enough that he stood there the other night and gave America the finger and all the congressmen in the United States, all 535 of them. Yeah, you can go pound sand. I don't care what you think. I'm going to put all the people I want to in Iraq. And like it or not, that's how it is. I didn't like that. And I don't think most of you liked it. But when he made this statement Sunday night on 60 Minutes, and let me quote it so that there's no misrepresentation here. I think the Iraqi people owe the American people a huge debt of gratitude. That's the problem here in America. They wonder whether or not there is a gratitude level that's significant enough in Iraq. Those are the words of George W. Bush. I wonder if there's enough gratitude from the American people. I tell you, I was so irate when I heard that. That I was... I know most of you have probably been online or you haven't seen on TV because they don't like to put things that are uncomfortable on TV. But you can sure go on online and find all of the horrible images, pictures of the Iraq War that you want to find. And you can see all the pictures that the American press does not have the guts to put in their magazines and their newspapers because it wouldn't be nice. Wouldn't be proper. Wouldn't be something people ought to see. The Iraqi people owe us a debt of gratitude. I wonder if Junior Bush has ever looked at the pictures of the dead and the mutilated children. Being dug out of the rubble caused by American artillery and bombs. It makes me so damn angry. Those pictures of little kids with their legs and their arms torn off by the force of explosions, their eyes gouged out, half of their skulls missing. In some cases, nothing left but an unidentifiable torso of a little child. And they should be grateful to us? For what? Should they be grateful that today, after it raining for days on end in Baghdad, that the sewer system for about 6 million people has collapsed and they can't get a drink of water out of their spigot without having sewage in it in the entire city, except for where the Americans are? And they should be grateful? People that have no money, have no job, can't even get water to drink that's safe to drink to keep them from getting death and disease out of their spigots in the kitchen. Gratitude? I think it was, can't remember who said it. I think it was either Martin Luther King or I think it was Malcolm X. Said, if you stick a knife 9 inches into my back and you pull it out to only 3 inches, that's not progress. That's what we've done to the Iraqi people. Bush can get up on TV and crow and brag all he wants to about bringing Saddam Hussein to justice. But I'll tell you, my friends, that is not enough justice for the Iraqi people. Not by any stretch.
Let's take a break. I'll be back in a minute.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Hey there. Thanks for staying with us here at the Guy James Show today. Glad to have you along with us. We got a nice sized audience today, and people are getting back into it. Had a little quiet time after the election for a while and over Christmas and New Year's, and people are coming back and starting to notice what's happening on the political scene. Scooter's trial started today. What do you think will happen there? Will Dickie Cheney actually get sworn in and have to answer questions with the truth? Hell, that'll be something new, won't it? The truth coming out of Dick Cheney's mouth? Whoa. My, oh, my, oh, my. This is the same Dick Cheney that has moaned and groaned for years now about the presidency not having enough power, and I know he said that he saw it as his job. Well, I think it was way back in 2002. He said that he saw it as his job to get some of the power that the White House had frittered away over the years and get it back. So that, you know, these people read the Constitution. Does Junior... I'll bet you something. I have no way of proving this. I have no way of proving it. I will bet you George Bush has never read the Constitution of the United States nor the Bill of Rights. I will bet you that he has not. I thought of him last night. He went to some movie. The Good Shepherd. And it was about the... It was about the Yaleys, you know, and the the Bonesman. There was a lot in it about the Bonesman. It was about the CIA and the Bureau of Investigation and all that. But a good bit of it centered around the Bonesman, the Skull and Bonesman at Yale. I want to tell you one thing. If in fact the Bonesman, and I have discovered that I had a relative that was in the Skull and Bones Club in 1929. What a pleasant thought. If that club is anything like it's portrayed in that movie, whew, wow. I don't know what to tell you about that movie, The Good Shepherd. I really don't. Matthew somebody is, I don't know my stars. Matt Damien, I don't know. I'm trying to think that little guy that goes nuts in all the movies and swears like Joe Pesci. I'm getting the studio audience here to let me know about this. And Angelina Jolie, and who is the Robert De Niro? I knew that one. I knew Robert De Niro. If that movie's anywhere close to the truth, oh. Good God. If it is, we're as dirty as anybody. Anybody. But, Cheney. We're talking about Cheney. He's described Congress as a bunch of gnats. Gnats. I mean, that's the kind of regard this White House has for the Constitution of the United States. You know, that's how they see the three co-equal branches of government. The other two are gnats, the Supreme Court and just, you know... They truly do see an imperial presidency, a presidency where Junior Bush makes all the decisions without the advice and consent that was mentioned. You know, I mean, I know that doesn't mean anything anymore to those people, but it was set up, the advice and consent. Those were three very important words about the co-equal branches. The people's representatives, if you know what I mean, our representatives. I have to wonder, we had a caller last week, and you all know who I'm talking about. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Doesn't matter. They're all alike. When you get to people that are still on the bandwagon, the people that still have Bush 04 stickers, let me confess something here. My wife's in the studio. I didn't tell her about this. You're going to think I'm terrible. But I thought it was funny, and I did it anyway. I was coming home from the office the other day, and I called her, and I said, "What would you like to have to eat tonight?" She said, "Well, I'd like to have something from Arby's." And it so happens that I do go by an Arby's on the way home. So she said, "You'd like to have a Reuben sandwich and some of these new potato bites." And I don't need to go into all the detail. And a Jamocha shake. She likes those, you know. And so I pulled into the drive-through at Arby's. And it's early, so there's no crowd. There never is at Arby's. Too expensive for fast food. Good fast food, but there's an ad for them right there. Free ad. I sent them a bill. There's a car in front of me with some couple in it, about 45 years old, I'd say. And it took them 10 minutes to get their order through to the little box out there. It took them 10 minutes to tell them, because I could tell they were giving them all these details. You know, they wanted it well done on one side, not on the other. I don't know. And they had a Bush 04 sticker on the back of their car. So when they pulled up to the window, I got out of my car. I was behind them. And I went up and knocked on the passenger side window because I was feeling a little bit. I'd had a bad day. I knocked on the window, and this guy rolls down. The wife was driving. The guy rolls down the window. And I said, "I just think I ought to tell you. Somebody doesn't like you. Somebody put a Bush sticker on the back of your car. And that window went up real quick. I couldn't help myself. I couldn't help it. It was there. Hey, what could I do? What could I do? I confess things to you people. but I did that. You want to know a little bit about me? That's just the kind of guy I am, particularly if I've had a bad day. They're lucky I didn't say more, because as you know, I've got more contempt for that sort of thing than I should have. And it takes me back when you think about these people driving around with Bush stickers on their car today, and it takes me back. You know, for years in the South, they had these literacy tests for black folks to see whether or not they were smart enough to vote. And it was just a means of keeping the black voters away from the polls. That's all it was. Because God knows in those days that most of the black folks were smarter than the white folks, but that's beside the point. Particularly if they believed in slavery like they did, and segregation. What a proud history the South has. Not all of you, mind you. What a proud history. But it was just a means of keeping the black voters away from the polls. But I'm not so sure that they shouldn't initiate something like that again. Nationally. All over the country. Mostly for registered Republicans. In fact, completely for registered Republicans. After all that happened in the first 4 years of Junior Bush's presidency... And I'm serious. You really do have to wonder about the literacy of anybody who voted for him again. And you really have to wonder about anybody still supporting him now. And I tell you this truthfully, I'm not kidding. I don't suffer fools easily, but today when someone tells me they voted for George Bush, I just kind of sort of tune them out. Because I know that if they voted for George Bush, they don't have anything to say to me that I could take seriously whatsoever. That has so colored my... And when they talk, I kind of pretend like I'm listening to them while I'm thinking about what I got to do later in the day, really, is what I'm thinking about. It does no good to talk to them. It's best just to let them live in la-la land and continue on with their trip to fantasy land with George W. Bush. In some ways, I pity them. But then I realize that some of these people are in positions of authority and power. And it scares the hell out of me. It really does. So, I don't know. If you think we can get that through Congress, literacy test for all registered Republicans, I think it would be a good thing. It's just a recommendation from the Guy James Show. Sure as hell, Bush has never taken the literacy test anywhere. He's probably the only one when he's reading that pet goat book and didn't know what it was about. But he goes on and on about Iraq, and I get so tired of reading about it and his thoughts and the White House's thoughts. And, you know, he delayed this escalation rollout for close to a month so he could, what was it he said, gather a variety of opinions. He rejected them all. He rejected the Iraq Study Group. He rejected the Pentagon brass, what they had to say. He rejected what Congress had to say. He sure as hell rejected what the American people had to say. And as it turns out, now we find out he rejected what the Iraqi government had to say, that they really didn't want to go along with this. You know, when he made that statement about he was going to stick to his guns, even if the only two people supporting him was Barney and Laura. I think he got his advice from Barney. He must have. You know, here we are in this position. We can bitch and moan about this war all we want to. Sure, it's got to be stopped. It's got to be stopped, but he's not going to stop doing what he wants to do until somebody stops him. And that's what America needs to focus on, is stopping him. You stop him, you stop the war. It's that simple. It couldn't be more simple. You know, the only groups who don't support us now are the Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds.
But as long as God's on the decider's side, one Junior George W. Simpleton Bush. What a shame this great nation is in this position. What a shame. I don't know. Makes me sad now and then. Really does. We're going to pause for a quick break, and I will be right back.
I'm an African American.
I'm Hispanic American.
I'm of European heritage.
My forefathers overcame the trials of slavery.
One of my ancestors was a member of the Continental Congress.
I served in our nation's armed forces.
Two of my uncles fought for our country in the Korean War.
And I am an American Muslim.
And I am an American Muslim.
I am an American Muslim.
A message from the Council on American-Islamic Relations. For more information, visit cair-net.org.
Thank you.
Guy James back with you for the last, seven and a half minutes of the program today. You still got time to call in. Phone's been fairly quiet today, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. My, I like that version of Eva Cassidy doing Time After Time. She is, her work is absolutely wonderful. There's, I don't know, there's just a feeling there. That she's able, so few performers are able to. Yes, many people have wonderful voices and can sing, but there's so many people that can also throw tremendous feeling in there as well. And Eva Cassidy's one that did that. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director, for putting that on the program today. Very, very nice. I guess I said that, 866-546-5254. I was talking just a bit earlier, and I'll mention it again now, from the UN. It says residents of Iraq's capital are at risk of contracting a range of waterborne diseases as the city's sewage system has collapsed after 4 days of heavy rain, the country's health minister said on Monday. For nearly a week now, 45-year-old teacher Yassim Abdullah has been forced to buy bottled water for his family's daily use and at an expense that his meager income barely covers. We can't use tap water for drinking or cooking. It's all sewage. That is why I've put aside 100,000 Iraqi dinars, about $75 American money, to buy water for cooking and washing, said Abdullah, a father of five girls from Baghdad's poor neighborhood. Dr. Abdul Rahman Adil Ali of Baghdad Health Directorate warned of the dire consequences of a non-operational sewage system. He says, as the sewage system has collapsed, all residents are threatened with gastroenteritis, typhoid fever, cholera, diarrhea, hepatitis, and in some of Baghdad's poor neighborhoods, people drink water which is mixed with sewage, Ali said. He added that the health ministry was prepared for an initial outbreak of diseases, but expressed concern that unless the municipality could deal with the sewage problem quickly and effectively, health problems would inevitably escalate. Gratitude. Mr. Bush wants them to have gratitude. Hey, on a lighter note, I don't know where I saw this today, but they're having a discussion. It was on one of the news programs, and you're going to think it's absolutely silly, but they were having a discussion on who is the richest fictional characters. The richest fictional characters. And I thought, well, now that's an interesting take. And, of course, anybody of my age group knows for a fact that the richest fictional character is Scrooge McDuck. I mean, everybody knows that. And on these people's list, he was only number three. And so I protest. They had Daddy Warbucks as number one. But I think Scrooge McDuck is getting screwed in that deal. Because, I mean, everybody knows he had a big vault and he had, you know. You don't hear that on the Rush Limbaugh show now, do you? Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, guys. This is Chris Benson calling from Moscow, Idaho.
Hi, Moscow, Idaho.
Yeah.
That huge metropolis.
I have one comment.
Yes, sir.
That we should remind the military and every other public official that they did not take an oath to the president. They took an oath to the Constitution of the United States.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And I think that the message that we should communicate to the military, to the police, and everyone out there, they're not responsible to the president. They're responsible to satisfy their oath to the Constitution.
I think you're exactly right, and that's a point often lost in this decision.
Well, that was all I got to say.
Well, thanks. Hey, you having cold weather in Moscow yet?
Oh yeah,
snow.
It was 0 degrees last night. I just trying to keep warm.
Yeah, well.
But at least it's not flooding, and I have electricity and water.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for that.
Very much so, yes. Hey, okay. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Okay, thank you for hearing me out.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
Bye now. That's the first call we've ever gotten from Moscow, Idaho, I can tell you that. it is a cold place up there. Very cold. Where are we at here? We got about a minute and a half until the top of the hour, until the program's over. A minute and a half. Not enough time for any more calls. But I do want to remind everybody, and that reminds me, I'll be going to Washington next week, and don't you know, it's probably going to be cold. They've been talking about some of the cherry blossoms blooming early last week, and nice and warm and all that. I'm going to have to pack warm clothes, cold clothes, take an overcoat. Oh, I hate that. I have to take lots of clothes. Can't pack light for a trip to Washington at the end of January. Oh, well. Hey, I'm looking forward to that, and we'll be talking a little bit more about it tomorrow, the group that we're going to go there and be on Radio Row. I think, who else is going to be there? The Young Turks are going to be there, myself, and I don't know, just a few others. So, hey, I'm looking forward to that very much, so I'd love to go to Washington. Every time I go, try and take in something different that I haven't seen before, but there's not a whole lot left I haven't seen, but we'll do our best on that. Hey, it's been so good having all of you along with us here this afternoon. I enjoy visiting with you every single day. I really do. There's not a day goes by that I don't enjoy talking to the audience and having them talk to me. Do you want to remind everybody that you're listening to The Guy James Show? Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for great programming the whole rest of the evening. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, gang.